Hello and welcome to Conscious Conversations with One Breath Institute with your hosts, Lisa McNett and Debbie Sherman. Tune in for mind-blowing conversations on how to be more conscious and present in your life.
Topics we cover include healing, spirituality, introspective breathwork, astrology, dreams, alternate states of consciousness, and so much more. Hear from us and our interesting guests. Make sure to follow and subscribe to easily find us and listen again.
Hello and welcome to Conscious Conversations with One Breath Institute. I am Lisa McNett, our host for today. And with me, I'm very excited, is Steve Pratcher. Steve and I know each other. We go back a few years. Quite a few years, I think, at this point. And I'm super excited that you're here, Steve. I am going to read your bio so that everybody knows. So let me open that up. And Dr. Stephen Pratcher is a research assistant professor at the University of Florida. He received a bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I might not be pronouncing these things correctly, and a PhD in psychology from the University of Missouri with training in social personality psychology. His research in graduate school centered around the interpersonal and relational effects of mindfulness and meditation. He recently completed a three-year NIH, National Institute of Health, funded postdoctoral fellowship with the University of Florida's Pain Research and Intervention Center of Excellence. I love that acronym, PRICE.
Yep.
Dr. Pratcher's current research focuses on developing and testing complementary and integrative interventions as possible treatments for chronic pain that also have the potential to improve whole person health and emotional well-being. Specifically, he's interested in investigating the efficacy and psychosocial mechanisms of breathwork interventions and psychedelic-assisted therapy. He is supported by a five-year career development grant from the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health to develop and test a clinical breathwork intervention as a possible treatment for adults with chronic low back pain.
Thank you for that.
I love the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot there, and I appreciate that sort of introduction and background. And I mean, I'm happy to dive in more to any part of that. But I think the career development grant studying breathwork is really exciting and kind of what I'm focusing on now and kind of hoping to talk a little bit more about in today's conversation.
100%. Yeah. I mean, that's so, you know, we have One Breath Institute and, you know, breathwork is my passion. And so, I mean, there's so many amazing words and work. I'm in awe of all the work that you're doing, but yes, I would like to explore the work that you're doing now with breathwork. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, but first, I would just love to hear a little bit about, like, how did you get into all of this? Like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I'll try not to get stuck in the weeds. But I think it kind of goes back to just, I've always been kind of curious and interested in different types of interventions and therapies, and also, like, with the sort of backdrop of wanting to improve myself and self-improvement, personal development. And so it kind of started with meditation when I was in college, back when I was 18, just as a form of motion regulation and different ways to try to deal with stress. And at the same time, during college, I also developed my own sort of types of chronic pain, starting with chronic low back pain. But then in grad school, it kind of branched out from there and had repetitive strain injury and different things that led me to different sorts of practices of getting in my body and using breathing and attention to try to release tension and move through pain, basically, and just feel better overall. And so at some point I got into bioenergetics. And so it was, I think, kind of eye-opening for me of an actual structure or framework of how to use breathing and attention to help release tension in the body and sort of free up energy is the idea behind it. And so that also led me down the path of somatic psychology and understanding how emotional issues can also show up in the body as physical issues. And I think with that sort of background, it kind of led me to looking into different types of breath work, kind of starting with Wim Hof breathing, just because it was very accessible and something that you can kind of try and do just on your own at home. And I think there were like documentaries of Wim Hof back in the day that were just kind of cool to see what he could do. And I was also familiar with Stan Grof's work, because in graduate school, I was also interested in doing research on psychedelic assisted therapy. And he led research back in the 60s looking at LSD for various types of conditions. And once psychedelics became illegal, him and his wife kind of switched to studying holotropic breathwork for a number of years. And so I'd seen sort of videos and read about it and kind of wanted to try this longer form of breathwork within a group session, like in within a group setting for myself to see kind of what all the hyper buzz was about. And it kind of worked out perfectly where one winter break, I went back up to Chicago and there was a holotropic breathwork session offered literally 5 minutes from my house. And so it was one of those times where it's just like this opportunity is there. And so I took it and kind of just have continued to go to all different types of breathwork trainings and experience all the different types of breathwork that I can to just, again, kind of see what's out there, but also see what might be helpful. And just, I'm curious to see what the differences between different types of breathwork are and what's unique and shared and common across them. And also what might lead to the most benefits for my life and something that I can share for others. And that's kind of where this intersection as a scientist comes in, where I have a training, pretty thorough training in conducting research and interest in intervention science and conducting randomized controlled trials and clinical trials to be able to build an evidence base of whether something works and how something might work. But then I also have the personal interest side of this, where I've seen plenty of benefit from different types of breath work in my own life. And I think right now, this sort of state of the science is we need much more rigorous research on these sort of types of conscious connected breathing breath work practices. There's some out there on sort of slow breathing and coherent breathing, but not a lot in this more Western form of breath work that has been around since the 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm trying to lead my career is taking the experience and training that I have in both realms or both worlds and bringing them together to hopefully do the research that builds up an evidence base so that people who might otherwise be resistant to trying breathwork or uninformed about what breathwork is are more open to trying it. And maybe for some people, it does help with various mental health issues or potentially even physical health issues, which is what I'm trying to research since chronic pain is such a sort of major problem that affects so many people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 So you already had this history of, you know, in with your education, you were already in the scientific realm and the research realm and the psychology realm. And mm-hmm. so, and it's so interesting how oftentimes our work, our life work, does stem from something shifting personally, a personal mm-hmm. experience that kind of has us go, let me check this out over here when maybe I was going in this direction. And so, yeah, you were experiencing some of your own chronic pain You said particularly low back, which is now the focus of your research. And being a psychologist or psychologist, psychiatrist.
Yeah, psychologist. I mean, I don't see clients in therapy. Right. I am technically a psychologist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So being a psychologist, it seems natural to me that you would find bioenergetics first and that you would be aware of the Graf's work and kind of go that path. So, yeah. And also just as someone who owns a breathwork school, like, thank you. Thank you. Because, you know, oftentimes that is a very unique, you're a very unique personality. It takes a certain type of person to be able to have the sensitivities of being a breath worker, you know, wanting to explore those realms that are in some ways esoteric. There are some things that are not tangible about those and very person-centered and oriented. And also, you know, having that knowledge and know-how and patience and brain to focus on research. So yeah, so that's not me. Thank you for doing that work because, you know, I speak to people all the time and they, you know, want to know more about research that's out there. And so it feels like a good segue. You know, you were mentioning that you are guided respiration mindfulness therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that is kind of what I'm focusing on now in this 5-year grant from NIH or NCCIH, the Complementary and Integrative Health branch of NIH. And so it didn't necessarily start out looking at guided respiration mindfulness therapy when I wrote the grant application, and it took 2 years to get it funded. So this is kind of a long process in the making with multiple sort of evolutions to get to this place. But ultimately, I thought it was best to go this route of studying guided respiration mindfulness therapy for a few reasons. And I'll just give a quick overview of what it is so people understand. Like, perfect. It's a form of breath work developed by a guy named Dr. Lloyd Leland, who is in New Zealand. And it's one reason that I really like it is that it's sort of simplified across and includes what I see as kind of core components across multiple styles of breathwork or conscious connected breathing styles of breathwork. And so it has three main components. The first one he calls respiratory regulation, which is a conscious connected breathing pattern where it's emphasized that you take a full inhale and a relaxed exhale, ideally expanding the chest on the inhale. And then you maintain the breathing pattern for 60 minutes, as in many typical types of breathwork styles. And then the second component is mindfulness of somatic sensations or somatically oriented mindfulness. And so a main instruction is to focus on the strongest or most dominant physical sensation in the body from moment to moment with an orientation of acceptance and openness of just sort of feeling what is going on in your body that's sort of brought up or activated through the breathing. And then the third component is relaxation. So for the breathing, it's a relaxation of the exhale, just kind of letting it go, letting it out. And for the mindfulness, it's relaxation of physical tension in the body. So oftentimes when you breathe in these sorts of ways, it has a tendency, depending on the style, it can elicit a stress response within the body. And sometimes it brings up uncomfortable or difficult sensations or feelings or emotions or memories to feel. And so one of our sort of forms of not feeling is, one, not breathing, but also, two, sort of tensing or fighting against feeling. And so this sort of relaxation component is to try to let go of the fighting and the resistance to feeling to hopefully sort of help integrate the feeling or energy or whatever it is to release tension in the body. And so like I said, that I see these three core components show up in lots of different styles of breath work. And I think one thing I wanted to mention at the beginning is that I've been fortunate to train with a lot of different breathwork experts who have their own schools, including you. Is it okay if I mention some of the
people? Yeah. I would love that. That was a question that I had as well. And I figured we'd kind of get there. So yeah, bring it all in.
I think it's important to acknowledge, like, I'm over here standing on sort of the shoulders of giants, and that it's not like I'm just kind of coming up with this style of breath work on my own and seeking out to test it. But I've received training from many people who have their own schools, kind of starting off with biodynamic breath work, trauma release. And so I've learned from both in person and online from Giten Tonkov and Prema McKeever. I've also done trainings with Robin Clements and his Breathwave School, which he trained for a long time with Judith Kravitz, who was around since the beginning. I've been fortunate to work with Jim Morningstar and take a summer residential course and learn about therapeutic breathwork. And then last year, recently, I completed a 10-day vivation breathwork training with Paul Hughes, and he worked closely with Jim Leonard, who was another person who was kind of around at the beginning of this breathwork movement back in the 60s. And so I feel like I've been able to sort of get insight into these different schools and these different sort of ways about using breath and using attention and using other sorts of elements, because some of these schools incorporate different components such as movement or touch, and I think there are lots of nuances to each person's school, as you know, and have, I'm sure, researched yourself, but there's also a lot of commonalities across styles of breathwork. And so for the purpose of this research, I really wanted to try to boil it down to, okay, what are the sort of simplest core components of breathwork that we can study? Because then the simpler it can be, the easier it is for us to understand scientifically what is it about the intervention that might be driving any sort of effects or benefits that we see. And later you can always add on other components to see if there are sort of additive or synergistic effects of, say, adding touch or body work to a session. But I see this as kind of like a foundation of, okay, I think these might be sort of the minimal number of components to really have this active, powerful potential intervention that we can then sort of point to, okay, these elements on their own seem to produce some sort of benefit for, in this case, people with chronic pain. But another reason that I really like this guided respiration mindfulness therapy, or GRMT, is because Lloyd, the developer, took the time to create a sort of standardized treatment manual and protocol to study the intervention with his work probably over the last several years. And so one of the things about intervention science is you want to be able to say what you're studying with an intervention and have it be replicable, that people can take a training or look at a treatment manual and be able to deliver the intervention. And so I think one of the drawbacks of types of breathwork is that it can be extremely different from person to person and session to session. And I think there's obviously good that comes from that and more of a personalized approach. But in terms of thinking scientifically, we need to focus on something called internal validity, where we know what we're studying, we're looking at it repeatedly in different people to be able to draw conclusions from it. And so having this sort of protocolized intervention that we can run with simple instructions on how to do it, but then managing what kind of comes up within a session and sort of adapting to where a participant or a client is at, I think gives us, again, more confidence that we can understand what's going on, or we might be able to understand what's going on or what's driving any sort of effects that are observed both within a session as well as hopefully changes that happen after a session or a series of sessions in this case.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, this GRMT, GRMT sounds, there's some commonalities with introspective breathwork therapy. So there's some shared philosophy, and there's some shared philosophy and commonalities with all the different, like you're saying, different styles of breathwork in different schools, and coming from a place of research, you know, you are highlighting a very good, a very strong point that something needs to be measurable. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, it needs to be measurable. And this, you know, the way I heard it is just, yeah, we're using these four, we're implementing these four types of technique every time, and we're having measurable results. And that's where you get the research, because for me, we were talking a little bit beforehand, I'm going to be meeting different people where they're at. So one session might include more touch, another session might not have any touch at all. And so that's not giving you the same sort of container mm-hmm. to be able to duplicate results. Yeah. So I'm curious about what kind of results you are seeing.
Well, so we're still at the very early stages of it. And so we haven't actually run participants yet. It's kind of in the startup phase of the study where I got the funding recently within the past year. And there were some delays at the start because I was potentially moving universities, but now the plan is to start it here at Florida. And so currently what I'm doing right now is reaching out to local therapists who are interested in being trained in the intervention and serving as study therapists to actually run the sessions with participants. And the way the study is structured is, we're just going to run small uncontrolled trials of this GRMT for people with chronic low back pain and sort of stop after a small number of participants and look at the results and see what people's experience was. And because this is a smaller scale study and still looking at sort of intervention development, we're not trying to make claims of efficacy of this works for chronic low back pain yet. There's one of the things about science, unfortunately, is that it's a super slow process. And so this is more of considered a pilot feasibility and acceptability study. And so one thing we will learn is whether people are willing to engage in 8 weeks of this type of intervention, where there's a session a week for 8 weeks, whether they find the intervention acceptable, or whether they drop out before the 8 weeks for any number of reasons. It's really sort of, again, trying to do the starting work of, okay, we need to show that this is feasible and acceptable. And then once we do that and hopefully have some sort of signal that it's clinically effective, where people do have improvements in both pain intensity and how much pain interferes with their life. Those are kind of the primary outcomes that we're looking at. If we can show that, then my next step is to apply for additional funding to conduct a larger scale study, where then we would be able to have enough people or enough power to make claims of whether it is effective for this subset of people within this sort of range of parameters that we're kind of studying.
Okay, yeah. And so let's take a step back, because with all of your personal experience, personally experiencing breathwork, and what you have witnessed, you know, in all of the different trainings that you've participated in or with people that you've worked with so far with breathwork, what have you seen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that interests me most about breathwork is just the wide variety of experiences that can happen. And I'm sure you're familiar with that and all the sessions that you've facilitated. And so, I mean, I'll say I've seen a number of transformative experiences or beneficial effects from people. And one thing that I find interesting is people will bring up after a session, like, I felt a pain in my leg, and it brought back a memory of an injury that I had when I was a kid that I didn't even remember was there. And so it's almost like there are sort of I would say implicit memories or stored memories in the body of past injuries or past sort of emotional or overwhelming experiences that can be brought up with breath work and hopefully sort of integrated. And so I think it's a way to get into some of the potential reasons that chronic pain starts from unresolved past injuries or I mean, even with, if you think about soft tissue and scarring, like if you have an injury and then it scars over, it can stay there, but it might lead to persistent pain in the way that it sort of exists in the body. And so I guess to try to get back to your question, I think for some people it can be very effective, but for some other people I've seen or noticed that they might feel good after a session, but it doesn't necessarily lead to any sort of lasting or significant changes. And I think that's part of where the science and the research is important to come in and figure out, are there certain types of people who might benefit most from breath work? Or also, like, how many people do benefit? And understanding in more of a quantifiable way, what are the effects, not just immediately after a session when people tend to feel good, because people can feel good after a massage, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get rid of their pain for months to come. And one of the goals with this work is we need effective pain treatments that provide lasting and significant pain relief. And so my hope is that allowing people to touch into hopefully deeper core causes of chronic pain, whether it's emotional or physical in nature or something else, then we can hopefully resolve whatever that issue is. And then people live a life where it's sort of less encumbered by pain and emotional dysfunction or other sorts of issues that can contribute or worsen chronic pain.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I, you know, those, yeah, there's so much, where do I want to go with this? Yeah, it feels like that when there is that integration of experience, you know, when there is something that is very old that is touched upon and connected with, when there is an integration of that experience or processing of that experience, from what I've, like, you know, from what I've witnessed and confidently feel is that that does create, you know, that can create more of a lasting change than just having a big emotional release and feeling good afterwards. Mm-hmm. This is something that we, I'm going to ask you this. This is something that we have a lot of questions about, and we try to, Andy teaches anatomy with our school, and he does his best to really explain and get to how this happens. And for you being a researcher and a scientist, you know, what is there anything that you can say about how or why that, mm-hmm. you know, that memory can get touched on in a breathwork mm-hmm. session? And
yeah, so I mean, it's a great question and one that I think will need a lot more thinking and time and years to sort of unpack and uncover, but it's certainly something that I'm interested in. And I think what I've been thinking about most lately is something called allostatic load, or the model of allostatic load, which was popularized by a guy named Bruce McEwen, who is no longer with us, but it really is about stress and the stress response, and this idea that over a lifetime we sort of accumulate wear and tear in our body systems from chronic stress or overactivated or underactivated allostatic system. So not turning off the stress response when it's no longer needed. And in his model, it's really interesting, and I wish I could show you a picture, but what it boils down to is there are physiological reactions that contribute to allostatic load. And one of the things that I think about is that breathing is very closely tied or linked to the autonomic nervous system. And with that, it means it's related to the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system and the ability to generate a stress response as well as the relaxation response. And so I think one of the things that we're doing with breathwork by breathing in this way, in this circular, connected, continuous fashion, is potentially generating a stress response, which matches a stress response of a previous experience, potentially overwhelming or stressful or traumatic in some cases, that brings it back into consciousness or memory to be sort of felt or worked with. And it kind of goes to the idea of it's a form of like interoceptive exposure to past stressful experiences. And this is kind of similar to the work they've done with MDMA for PTSD. It's a way to sort of reconsolidate memories. And so it's bringing up this past experience by tapping into the same physiology that we might have been in at the previous time. Sort of like how if you smell something unique, it can bring you back, trigger a memory of a certain sort of situation or instance. And so I think it works that way, but with the body, where it can bring up things that were sort of never fully completed or resolved at the time, because we might not have had the resources or the ability or the space or the time to sort of deal with the stress response then. And so we just shut it down, stop our breathing, tense up in different ways. And so by initiating this sort of breathing rhythm, I mean, that has, breathing is extremely vital. And so it's interconnected with all these systems in the body and including the brain. And I don't want to get off on too many tangents, but I think by breathing in this way, we're disturbing our normal sort of equilibrium or homeostasis of the body. And so it sets off a cascade of physiological responses and also results in different psychological experiences. That is why I think there are a variety of experiences that can come up, but it's not like you can just predict that, oh, I'm going to feel this past injury in today's session. And so the sort of mechanisms of why one thing comes up versus another, I don't know for sure, but I think it does relate to tapping into the stress response by breathing in this way, to bring up similar sorts of experiences potentially. And then kind of to close the loop, then using the relaxation or mindfulness and somatic experiencing or somatic tracking are ways to sort of try to complete that stress response by initiating the relaxation response, again, to reduce tension or to integrate whatever sort of feeling or sensation might be there.
Yeah, because if it just comes up.
Mm-hmm. How do you work with it?
Yeah. How do you work with it? Or you know, what happens if that integration doesn't happen? You know, and there's a variety of different things we know can happen if that integration doesn't happen. And, you know, so, yeah, I'm about to go on a tangent now, too. No tangents. No, great answer. So, is there anything else that you would want to say about guided respiration mindfulness therapy, about the research that you're doing, or yeah, just anything more along those topics that we haven't touched on yet?
I mean, nothing strongly is coming to mind. I'll just say, like, I'm super interested and passionate about this work, and I think it's just the beginning. And so there's a lot more that needs to be done. And I think other people, like building teams and having other people who want to support this work, is a great way to advance it. And hopefully with time, we'll be able to build up more of an evidence base and be able to answer some of these questions and be able to point towards sort of rigorous scientific studies and randomized controlled trials, which is kind of the gold standard, at least in the medical field, of, okay, we have data here to show that breathwork can help for certain people in certain indications. That's kind of where I'm trying to helped build this field of the science of breathwork. And it's going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of people, and unfortunately a lot of money as well, because science isn't cheap. And I think my goal is to get to a place where hopefully one day people will have the option to go to someone for breath work for various conditions that might be reimbursed by insurance or recommended by their doctor. Like, it doesn't need to be sort of something that people seek out on their own outside of a medical context, but to have it sort of integrated into a model of clinical care is what I'm trying to do. Except again, you need to build an evidence base to try to make these sort of changes where people will see with their more medical lenses and other sorts of hats that people wear that there is something here. It's not just woo-woo, people are breathing and having these experiences, but there's good rationale for why it may help people with mental health issues or physical health issues. And having the awareness that people can recommend that as a possible treatment option, I think would be a great step forward for the world and where we're going.
100%. Yeah. I mean, 100%. If we could have breathwork be recognized in a more mainstream way, I mean, I think the whole world would change. You know, a lot of pharmaceutical, there would be potentially a lot less use of pharmaceuticals, right? Because if we can address chronic pain, be that emotional and or physical, and I believe oftentimes there's a very strong link between the two, which it would be just amazing. Imagine that, doctors recommending breath work.
Right.
You know, I have the pleasure of offering breath work at a residential trauma and addiction treatment center. And with that, I'm seeing more and more treatment centers for addiction starting to recognize and bring breathwork in. And so for me, that gives some hope of breathwork coming on more mainstream. But it's not just addiction, it's not just trauma. It's really, if we start looking at symptoms, right, like you're taking low back pain, looking at symptoms and identifying that that the breath has the power to support low back pain or any kind of chronic pain or any kind of, I'm saying anything, who can it help and how can it help? And, you know, I'm coming back to what you said about, there are some questions about, we can't go in and we just know the breath is going to go here and do this. It's not going to just go straight to the back, and it's not going to just bring whatever that answer is in that moment. That feels like, for me, it's one of the beautiful and interesting things about breathwork is that it feels like something greater. And when I say that something greater, I'm going to say the nervous system of the person, right? The nervous system of the person knows where that breath needs to go. And the intelligence of the breath and the person's nervous system knows where it needs to go. So it's going to present whatever is ready for healing and integration. And I imagine that also brings some challenges if you are needing it to go a certain place for research base.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to just totally agree and say that I think there is a wisdom to the body. And I mean, it's probably a common example, but if you think about if you have a cut on your finger, you don't have to think to heal the wound. Like, your body has innate mechanisms built in to take care of you and hopefully move towards healing and wholeness. And so what people say is if there's dirt in the wound or a rock in the wound, then there's something impeding the body from healing fully. And so I kind of think about breathwork in a similar way, except for instead of wound healing, it's more of like internal sort of processing or helping remove obstacles, whatever that might be in whatever form that is, if it's stagnation of something physical, tissue, lymph, or in the Chinese medicine, qi or anything like that, being able to move that and circulate that might create the conditions in the body for it to take over and engage these more endogenous healing mechanisms that we have. to help with various sorts of conditions and issues.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So we'll start to wrap it up. I appreciate your time. And I know you're super busy. So thank you so much for choosing to meet with me and being so generous with your time. How can people connect with you? How can people, because I heard kind of a call for more help in this area. So if there is any way that people can help or who would be a qualified person or, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. And I don't have a major social media presence and don't really plan to have one anytime soon. So I think probably the best way to reach me is via email. And I'm pretty sure my email is online if you search my name and either I think there's a ResearchGate profile or a directory from the University of Florida where I'm at. But yeah, I think the types of people we're looking for, like we're at this stage where most of the research right now I'm focusing on, like I need to be sort of limited in what I can focus on just because things take time and effort. And so I'm trying to do this study here in Florida. So it's sort of limited of what people might be able to contribute in that way. But I mean, I'm open to hearing people's ideas and other thoughts that they have around breathwork and whether it be related to science or personal experience. It is interesting for me to hear about other people's experiences too.
Okay, good to know. And we will share your email address with permission underneath this on all the platforms. Perfect. And maybe you'll come back in a year or so.
Yeah, once I have some data and results and things to talk about, I think that would be a good idea.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much from me and from everybody who is going to be listening to this. Thank you again for what you are doing for the field of breathwork.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate that acknowledgement too.
You're welcome. Any final closing words before?
No, I don't think so. I think we touched on a lot of different things.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much. And we look forward to having you back, Steve. Good luck with your research. Mm-hmm. And stay tuned for the next Conscious Conversation, everyone.
If you're hearing this message, you've listened to this episode all the way to the end. And for that, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
We want to hear from you. Reach out and let us know what you thought of this podcast. And please like, subscribe, and share this episode with your friends.